Bernstein's Flashpoint, then Agent Orange, make that call right now, 800-439-5732, and it will be doubled because we got a matching grant. This is your moment.
1-800-439-5732. 1-800-439-5732. Greg, I don't know what's happening at the answering there. We've got the same 10 people on the line.
Are you sure they're not switched? Maybe it's new 10 people. Let's keep a good thought.
No,
in the meantime,
okay,
and if you can't get through today, look, Dennis is on tomorrow, too. Not that I want you to delay, but don't forget, this, we are continuing on as long as you continue on.
Well, we've got 10 people on the line, Greg, and I have to say that we are, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we're out of time. We still have the same, one phone was answered. So we have 2786, 10 people still on the line calling, and I think we are just about out of time. Maybe we can get the system to work better tomorrow. Somebody needs to call over there. We have 30 seconds left. 1-800-439-5732. 10 people still on the line with 30 seconds left. I thank all the beautiful people who have called. Greg, we thank you for all the support you give us and all the great work and investigations you do protecting our vote. That means a great deal to all of us. We're going to have to get out of the way for news. I hope somebody will
You're
start
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming online at kboo.fm.
KBOO Community Radio wants to know what you care about this election season. We want to ask our listeners one simple question. What do you think candidates should be talking about as they compete for votes? Let us know by filling out our Citizens Agenda survey, and you can be entered into a sweepstakes to win a $50 Visa prepaid gift card. The responses we get from our community will inform our reporting on the November election. We want our coverage to serve our community, and we need your help to make it happen. If you would like to participate and be entered to win $50, open your web browser and type bit.ly/KBOO survey into the address line. Again, that's bit.ly/KBOO survey. And thanks.
We don't get fooled again.
This is Jeff Godsell, a contributor to Film at 11 on Friday mornings here on KBOO. Appreciating the arts and exploring other cultures is a vital part of a healthy society. The free exchange of ideas through artistic expression can be how we communicate, how we express our humanity, how we really connect with each other. Now, as obvious as this truth is, it does not always find favor with political establishments. So now, more than ever, support for the arts must come from each and every one of us. At a time when truth itself is under attack, valuable resources like the programming here on KBOO need your help to continue the free flow of ideas and expression. Even in good times, the arts struggle to stay funded. But now, with the challenges facing all of us every day, it is so important that the voices of compassion and open expression continue to be heard. Won't you join me in supporting this station with a contribution of any amount at kboo.fm/give, or if you prefer, donations can be sent to KBOO FM, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon 97214. Your donation will help ensure that the love of the arts and cultural diversity will continue to enrich our community. Thank you.
Welcome back to Art Talk Bus Stop. I'm Annie, joined with
Nicole.
I'm Katie Sullivan, an art teacher at Reynolds High School.
And I'm Erica Thomas, artist and producer of the show.
And we are joined here today with Rio and Christian from Roots Beats.
Hey. Hello, what's up?
Hi, welcome, welcome. So first, can you guys tell us about who you guys are and what you guys do?
My name is Rio Collier, and I'm a multimedia digital video artist, and I have a background also in doing more like documentary video work, but also a lot of experimental video, which is what I've been focusing more on these days. I do video production and installation and VJ work. And I also do that alongside Christian. We have a few projects together, actually. One of them, I think you guys know a little bit about, it's called the Roots and Beats Project. We teach digital media education and cultural engagement opportunities. So it's a really interesting fusion. And the other project we do together is called Psychotropica, which is predominantly Christian's music project. But when we perform live, I do video installation curated to the music sort of conceptually.
And I'm Cristian Osorio. I'm from Chile. I'm a... It's difficult to call like musician, but I'm more like a music producer. And yeah, we have the Roots and Beat project. We worked with in Reno School and other schools with kids. And Psychotropica was more like my personal music project.
Well, you guys seem to have a lot on your plate. Focusing in more on Roots and Beat, how did you get started with that? You know, who came up with the idea? How did this become something?
He's pointing at me. So I have done a lot of community education and teaching youth programs before, like previous projects. And so I just was a little more familiar with curriculum development and working with groups of people in a community education setting. And Christian also had experience previously in Chile with youth programs. Basically, it was a couple years ago, we just had this idea of like, hey, well, what if this is super cool? Kind of like, this is really cool what we're doing. What if we, it would be even cooler if we worked with some kids? Because I would have loved to have learned some of this technology and some of this stuff if I had the opportunity. And I'm sure there's some young people that don't have access to that education or to that technology, they would be really interested. And also our particular angle of our artistic production is another thing that really inspired us, like the concept of the way we teach. So we try to bring a lot of like personal identity and story into the background of it.
Yeah, that is one reason why like Psychotropic and Roots and Beats, they're pretty connected together, but Roots and Beats born from Psychotropica, from the idea from Psychotropica, that idea to bring a bunch of modern music fusion with like folkloric and traditional instruments and music, you know, and we find that is pretty cool, and the people really like it, and we are thinking like, yeah, maybe why we don't try to teach the kids like the same idea, like the same concept.
So from your site, I've seen that you guys use a lot of sort of digital stuff, but you also have some stuff that isn't possibly well known by a lot of people. Can you kind of tell us more about the different kind of instruments you use and what other untraditional things you use to teach?
Well, we have a bunch of, we use really a lot of MIDI controllers, like keyboards and bunch of controllers with bunch of like button colors. And for the class, we use a bunch of traditional instruments like teponachtlis and percussions and whistles, didgeridoos, like traditional flutes. And when we went there to school, we tried to like divide groups and work like, we switch groups, but the first group work like looking and playing and recording the traditional instruments, and the other side of the group work like in the electronic stuff. And later on, we switch groups and everybody can have the possibility to like experiment with like the electronic stuff in the side and the other traditional on the side.
Sometimes it's hard to explain to people, or if they haven't, try to get one picture that explains like what a typical class setting might look like, just because there's so much variety in what the students are using. But part of the concept is understanding partially like a signal path, and then also like where sounds come from. So if you have an app on your phone that's making like a drum pad or beats, those can be digital sounds, but we can also record original sounds and then augment those, manipulate, modulate those sounds, and you have a variety of possibilities of what that can be like. And so we try to have the kids record traditional instruments, handmade instruments, and then with those recordings, put them into the software so they can experiment with that.
Well, this is kind of straying away from the Roots and Beats project, but how did you guys learn to do all this stuff?
Well, for me, I've been traveling for a while from many different countries, and in each country I learned part of the culture and part of the instrumentation, where they play, and like traditions, and I learned for myself. Even in the street, with people in the street, I find like percussionists, and I'm like, I'm so curious, and I walk to them, and I'm like, hey guys, what are you playing? And I'm like, oh, this thing. And I go, hey, you can teach me, and they teach me things, you know? They teach me, I met some people like playing the didgeridoo, and I'm like, oh, well, you can teach me that, and that's how I learned the instruments. But later on over here, the things like I make rap and hip-hop when I'm more like teenager, it's 16 to 18, I think so. And there's where I learned to use the computer and record my voice and put some effects, something more simple. But later on here, when I established more here, I put more hands-on on the computer, and I tried to relearn for myself again, like how to use the software, and it took me well. Now I've been like 5-6 years working with the same software. Basically, that I learned for myself on the street, or with people, asking to people teach me what they are playing, like curiosity.
I think for me, I first got into video was really spontaneous, and I've always been more like, I want to learn something. Okay, I'm gonna go, you know, how, like, find some sort of way to figure it out. That's cool. I like it. So I was living for a while in Mexico, actually, working on a curatorial project, and I was working with all these really amazing and super interesting artists, and they were telling me so much about their artwork that they produce, and what's going on sort of socially in their communities, and I just was like, I want to make a documentary right now. And I just went and got a camera and had absolutely no skills at all. And I just, a little tripod, and I tried to interview people.
Without,
you know, about what do you like to do in your studio? Like, I came up with a list of questions, and I just had all this footage, and it took me a really long time to then figure out what to do with it.
And the family didn't speak much Spanish, you know?
Yeah. But what helped me with that was finding a group of friends that was interested in the same thing as me, and then we decided to make projects together. And so that motivation of having like a positive group of friends that you can motivate each other and learn from each other, and like, oh look, I learned this cool trick or this thing. And so then mixing that with, of course, YouTube. When I learn editing software, or even the more experimental software that I use now, I never took any class on it. It's a very slow process, but I think he did the same thing with Ableton, with his music production. It's like, I want to make this drum loop sound like this. Okay, put that words actually into Google. How do I make this look like that? And somebody else has had the same exact question. And so just sort of piecing it together. But really, it's like very informal training for both of us, and a conducive environment with community, co-learning.
You guys seem to both have very different backgrounds, where you came from Chile and you visited Mexico. How did you guys come together and meet each other and become friends?
We met in Bolivia, actually.
Wow.
I think that was one thing that we both initially connected over, was traveling and interest in exploring new places, and just like always interest in like what's on the horizon. And so he was living in Bolivia for around 4 years, and I went to South America to work, because another part of my my split personality interests is that I'm super into like permaculture and natural building, and you know, so I think the hands-on side helps with my obsession with technology. But I went and I was working with a group building off-grid sustainable houses. And after that, I decided I just wanted to spend a little bit of time to travel. Yeah, that was in the very, very south of Argentina. There was penguins there. No, but afterwards, I had a month, and I went and to Bolivia because I wanted to know Bolivia and spent some time traveling there and lived for a very short time in this town where he was living and working, and we just see each other every day and hanging out, and then afterwards we stayed in contact, and eventually he came to visit in the United States a couple times, and then now he stayed here.
So in the beginning of Roots and Beats, you obviously had to have some sort of help. How did you manage to reach out to people, and how were you able to kind of do that to make this project work?
Oh, we had the amazing help of a friend, Jessica Lagunas, from Latino Network. The whole program of Roots and Beats was sort of originally based on one class we wanted to teach. And we just sort of reached out to people in town. We don't have our own classroom. We don't have, I mean, we have to go somewhere to find where the students are. And so we got a hold of Latino Network. So I was reading a little bit about a program called Studio Latino. And they have after-school youth programs through the Sun Schools. So I just reached out to Jessica and said, hey, we have this idea we want to do, and maybe we can collaborate. And she was really into it too. So we just met a couple times and talked about what our idea was and how that might fit into their program. And then we piloted the first class at Reynolds Middle School. And that was our first time teaching together in this particular project. And then since then, we've worked with some other organizations too, and we have a ton of stuff that was on the horizon that we've had to put on hold because of this very strange and interesting time that we're in.
Yeah.
So as a nonprofit organization, how do you, like, how do you say it, book a, did they reach out to you and...
Oh, so you mean from a student's perspective, how does a student find how to take a class? Or
yeah.
Hopefully we're going to be continually evolving and offering more programming at different locations. But right now, we're pretty small, and it's predominantly Christian and I who are the main instructors, and we bring other guest instructors. But we don't have our own, like, center. Right. If we had a center, then we could have open hours, like drop-in hours, and more programming happening and more accessible. Right now, it takes a little bit more pre-planning, and we have to make a connection with a site, so a particular school or a community center or someplace like that, and we make an agreement with them that it works with them, and okay, we'll make this class from this month to this month every Tuesday, and then we'll work, and that would be open to anyone, but usually it's based on the kids who are going to that school or the youth that are involved in that neighborhood, you know, something like that. But hopefully we'll be able to offer more, and we're even working on some virtual programming. It's a little tricky since there's so much like technology and actual instruments and things, so we're trying to figure out what that might look like for us to still connect with students in a virtual setting.
I have a quote from here from your site. It says, our curriculum merges traditional and technology to weave culturally rooted digital storytelling, focusing on immigrant, refugee, and ethnic, experience. So focusing on that storytelling part, what specifically are you trying to tell through music, and how are you able to communicate that?
Pointing at me, you can answer. Well, part of it is we introduce the students also to like a lot of other artists. So part of the time in the class is sharing, and we have sort of like homework where it's like, okay, pick a list of these music videos. And then if you have one of them is interesting or you want to comment on, then we'll talk about that next class.
Well, obviously, videos and music like related with the same style of music we are teaching.
Yeah. Well, we'll have and not just like, oh, find a music video. It's like we have a list of as part of like the course materials. So part of that is connecting with artists that use their cultural identity rooted into their artistic production. It can be subtle. It doesn't need to be a narrative story, but a piece of artwork has a story. It can be a little bit different for everyone. It can be very, very abstract, but we try to think about like, what is the story of like ourselves, or what is the story that we come from, or what are the multi-layers of our identity that we might want to explore? If you don't have like a safe space to explore self-concept, that can be a deep thing. You might not pay a lot of attention to it. But if we create a space where students can explore the cultural history of an actual instrument, like not just like how to play that drum, but where does that drum come from? Who were the other people that play that drum, and what is the music they make with that drum?
And maybe it's interesting too when that instrument or that music or that like sample we are using from some tradition have something more personal, you know, like some feeling in yourself, like, but you know that has come from something deeply in your past life, part of your roots, you know, otherwise roots a bit.
You can make like urban, hip-hop, electronic music, but it doesn't need to sound the same as whatever the just hot beat is on viral videos right now. Like, you can create a sound that is more interesting to you and tells a little bit about like your influences. It can be a hip-hop song with a powwow drum, you know? The thing you're talking about in the song can be something about your life or your beliefs that bring something new to the listener or the viewer that makes it unique, that your personal story in that can actually be really powerful.
And a more hard context too, you know, like something to pop and like live, you know.
Well, if you like pop music, you can do pop music too. Yeah, with a message.
Yeah.
Were both of you, were either of you very music drawn when you were younger?
I have always really liked music, and I think that it's something that I struggle with in some way. In junior high, I played clarinet for a couple years, and then I wanted to do other things with my time and decided I would rather make art than play clarinet. And so I just left that aside for a while, and then later, maybe in my mid-20s, I picked up the musical instruments again, and I learned a lot, like self-study. I feel personally, for me, one thing that I lack, being able to self-identify as a musician, is like, I don't know, maybe it's the way my brain works. It's like, I don't feel as free as some people. It's like, for me, it's like super inspiring and amazing, and people that can just like freestyle or jazz, and they just are like creating their own language. And so for me, that doesn't come as easy as for other people. But I also like to think of that process for me to connect with other students and say, you don't have to self-identify as a musician to make music, especially using these really cool electronic tools. It's more being a composer. If you don't feel like you have sort of like music skills or the music mind, then you can still make really cool sounding stuff.
And for me, I grow up in a musician family, for say something. Almost all my family there come from Philharmonic Orchestra kind of musician, like playing in a big Philharmonic orchestras, like playing Beethoven and things like that. And my grandfather too, He's a luthier. He make instruments. He teach music in schools, in the jail even. And I never studied music really, but I grow up with a bunch of instruments and violins and harps and guitars and pianos and percussions all there in my house. And I like pick it up and I like shake it and moving and learning to how play it. All my life, I think I've been pretty curious about music. I remember when I'm more like younger, I have a bunch of different band projects, rock metal bands project, punk rock bands project, hip hop projects. Even I make like ragamuffin, dancehall, reggaeton. I explore everywhere. To me, it's more like a curiosity, but I think comes in on my blood, you know, like all my family comes from, they're all musicians. Well, later on here I start to study music production and PCC, and there's where I learn a little bit more like technical things.
How do you feel music and the sort of art helps people and helps people you interact with? Or
yeah, definitely helps a lot. I mean, I can see how the music, it's a super way to sometimes like express yourself, and oh, if you have something inside of you and you wanna push that outside, the music I think is a super good way to like leave emotion, leave energy to flow with music.
Yeah, I think that music is a particularly good way to connect with people, to get sort of like deep about it, you know. The music actually in some way like enters our body. The vibration is actually sort of like shaking up our cells a little bit, like when we absorb it, right? And so like I find that really interesting, that if you're say on a dance floor or at a concert and you're listening to music, all of the other people that are there with you, they're experiencing that same thing, and they might not think too deeply about it, but it has the potential, you know, it has that potential to create this really like strong shared experience. And then in addition to that, I think that when you make music, especially as a young person, and especially if creating music is new to you, or even just if you make a lot of music, but sharing that music with other people is new to you, then that's a really vulnerable space to be in, you know, like if you make any creation that comes from like your heart or like something deep inside of you, I think we're all like a little shy, you know, like, oh, I don't know if people will like it. And then when you see other people be able to connect with what you make and say, oh, I really like that, and mm-hmm. and if it can make them think about something that they identify with, your lyrics or the instrument that you use or something, it really has that possibility for connection that I really like. And putting yourself into something and sharing it, I think, is a really great experience. Do either of you make any music now, or is there something about music that interests you?
Manny, you want to go first?
Yeah, I actually really really into music. Just the other day I was mixing these two songs and like rearranging the song just to see how it is. Like I always do it with new songs that I carry.
Which software?
It's supposed to be like an editing software, I think, for like photos or something, but you can use Audios, and it's called
cool. That's cool.
Yeah, it's called QCup. I always like mix musics around and mix different sounds around there too.
Nice.
Yeah, I also like traditional music, like playing the violin. It's really fun learning new stuff on there too.
Cool. Nice.
Well, for me, I mean, I have a guitar right next to me. Wow. It's always in my room. I'm not really advanced at playing it, but I think my sister got this for her birthday like a long time ago, and then she kind of kept it in storage, and I pulled it out, and I kind of fixed up I picked up the string, and I've been planning to like add like painting onto it, like flowers, butterflies. I kept putting it off.
Nice.
And I think I have a little xylophone up here on my little shelf, so yeah. And I really like just listening to music and sort of being able to find just like the hidden beats of music, whether it's like a sound or or like a piano that's playing in the background, but I just really like analyzing music.
Yeah, cool.
Well, I actually have a question for you guys. What is sort of your ultimate goal with Roots and Beats, and where do you see it in the future?
For me, one important thing in my life is travel. I like to travel. I travel a lot. And I really want to, in some future, try to travel with Roots and Beats project, like going to, like, I don't know, some remote place in Mexico when the kids, they don't have access to technology and things, and bring that to them and teach them there, and like, and they can put their hands on and touch things and see the things from themselves, you know, or like, I don't know, maybe other kids in Bolivia, other kids, you know, like try to move the project from other places where the people need it to.
Yeah, I think it's a little tricky when, you know, some of the equipment is like, can be really expensive, but we also always try to focus on like what you can do also with just your phone, or like just how to sort of start changing your perspective of you know, using your technology only for social media platforms, or finding how you can use it as a tool, because it's a super powerful tool. And so once you're exposed to that, even if you don't have access to those particular tools after the class, it might be that inspiration to then search out like, oh, I know now what I can do with these sorts of things, and now I want to try to like search that out more. And so that's, I think, what we hope for is the, with the youth that take the class.
You're tuned in to listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Crossing Boundaries, virtual fishing derby and auction from Saturday, September.